podcast out of New York City. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, April 30th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.fm.
And today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 20 to the hour. We have another great show for you today that's going to include understanding more about the causes for eating disorders.
And how mad cow disease is in California.
And something about Barrett's esophagus and hiatal hernia. We've thought that acid has been the problem there for so long. Now we found it's something else. Tune in for that one.
And does cholesterol prevent cancer?
And what about sodas and strokes? Are they connected like heart attacks?
Plus, we have much, much more. And if you want to join in our conversation and you have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Eating disorders seem to be a lot more common than they used to be. I mean, when we were young, we didn't really hear about them much. And now we seem to know more about what causes them, why they are developing, things like anorexia and bulimia. And, of course, obesity is included in, as an eating disorder. But mostly what we're going to be talking about this morning is the anorexia and the bulimia.
Right. Well, see, these are conditions that are that come on most of the time in defense of lots of trauma that we have. And if we don't have support that goes along with things like severe grief or relationship problems or any kind of physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, this is sometimes what happens. And it seems like a strange, weird way for things to happen, but that's what we found.
Yeah, it's been found that when people have too little support. And sometimes, you know, some of the themes that seem to bring this on are even things like school transition, like going to junior high or going to college, or if you, relationship changes or death in the family, or if, you know, a home or a job change or illness.
It doesn't take much sometimes, and that really just tells us about the importance of the family structure. If you have a good family structure where you're getting the support that you need, and you're accepted and they're understanding and there's compassion, and generally speaking, these problems don't develop.
Well, what happens with anorexia?
Well, you just wind up thinking that you're fat when you're not. Your whole body image is distorted.
And people, they just stop eating, basically, or they throw it up. So these are
That's more bulimia. Anorexia is just not eating and exercising a lot. In bulimia, that's when you're really looking at all the throwing.
Well, that's when you eat a lot and then throw up.
Exactly.
With anorexia, people with anorexia also can throw up.
Right.
Like, for example, many families don't even notice it because the child is eating with them, and you know, usually this starts in junior high, but it can start as young as 8 years old. And they get up from the dinner table and go to the bathroom. Well, who would dream that that's what they're doing in the bathroom, that they're throwing up?
Yeah, well,
but there are things you can look for too, is if they have marks on their knuckles from putting your hand in their throat, or they even can develop calluses that way. But they have a lot of mood swings. They can get circles under their eyes. Obviously, they're losing weight, but a lot of times they start wearing baggy clothes to cover it up, and they're many times over-exercising. And these are things just to be aware of if your child says that they're on a diet, because you might just think, oh, great, look at that, they're losing weight, and then pretty soon it gets to be extreme. But when you're living with somebody every day, you might not pick up on it.
Well, when it gets extreme enough, it becomes obvious, and people are looking at themselves in the mirror, and they look like Twiggy did, you know, where they're just really mostly bones and a little bit of muscle, and they think they still have too much fat on their body. You know that there's something wrong with that perception.
And then the bulimia is when they just pig out, and sometimes they hide the food.
Yeah, it's binging and purging, and that's
purging. You know, sometimes they take laxatives or they take diuretics, which are dangerous to mess around with. So this is why it's so important for people that have these eating disorders to have their electrolytes checked and their heart rhythm checked and their teeth, because the acid can erode their teeth.
Yeah, well, once you have a condition like this, chances are, these statistics are awful. About 20% of people with this will actually die within 20 years of having it. Another 35% are going to recover. And the last 45% are going to struggle with this for the rest of their life.
Boy.
These are big issues. And the problem is the treatment is really expensive. You're looking at spending $30,000 to $100,000 easily to get the inpatient you care for 6 to 12 months, which is often what is needed to be able to treat the condition. So once the horse gets out of the barn here, it's really tough.
There are support groups for this. And it would be really good if you could get a person that you love that's suffering from an eating disorder to go and be with a group of other people that are having the same problem.
Yeah, it helps to get that kind of understanding. Because when somebody's gone through it, they really get it. And then when they can confide in each other because they're in about the same age group and have the same kinds of problems, they can talk about it. And the talk therapy is good, but a lot of the time the habits are so ingrained that what happens is they stick with that. And that's what happens and what they stay with the whole time that they have this eating problem.
And sometimes when this gets really serious, the people are hospitalized. And I know that one of the things that the doctors always say is not to let them get out of bed, because they don't want them to exercise.
Well,
they
people
don't
with
want
anorexia,
them to be, because yeah. they tend to overdo it, because
well,
they just don't want the calories.
Well, it's a perception. It's an abnormal perception of what your body size is. And as I said earlier, it goes back to these kinds of traumas that we have. You have physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, the PTSD, the post-traumatic stress that follows that, is awesome.
A lot of what it is a lack of control.
Well,
a
they feel like they have a lack of control. This is one thing they can control. And even if it doesn't make any sense intellectually, it makes a lot of emotional sense. And so that's why we see people that have these conditions are just going on and on.
They also start losing their hair on their head.
Yeah, well, the hair gets fine, it starts to fall out, and they might develop hair on other parts of their body that is just like a fine growth of hair on their face particularly. These illnesses are tragic, and it's not like it's that uncommon. There are about 8 million people, mostly women, who have these eating disorders. And we've got a lot of information on our site. If you go to drsabuta.com and put in weight control or weight management or weight assessment, or take the health assessment on weight. That's really what you want to do. There's a weight management assessment profile. And again, this site is totally free. You can take the assessment in under 3 minutes, and you'll get information back that's specific in audio and video about what your particular issues are and how they're related to your eating disorder. And when you watch these videos and you listen to the audios, you'll get a real good idea of what these illnesses are about, what you can do about them, and how specifically you can manage your situation. And again, this is a 100% free website, but you have to join to be able to get the information, and joining is free too. So for eating disorders, you know, it's a lot more than just people not having any willpower. There's a lot to do with weight management that has to do with psychological issues, with hormonal issues, with post-traumatic stress syndrome. And you need to know this. And if you don't, I mean, and most doctors don't, you wind up then with a situation that's a disaster.
Yes, it's really
it just goes on.
Very serious. And many people that have these eating disorders also do cutting.
Mm-hmm.
And they cover it up, so it's something to be aware of. Usually it's on their wrist, but they can do it anywhere in their body. It's to release the pain. I guess it distracts them from
the psychological pain. Differences in 50 years of how kids are responding to stress. It's different than it was when we were kids. And
I never knew of anybody like this.
There wasn't even a problem with obesity. You know, there might be one or two people in the whole school that had a major problem.
Well, you know, too, we were running around.
It was a lot more exercise,
for sure.
There
were no computers and all this technology that keeps people sitting around to entertain
themselves. And families were more connected. I think there was more family connections. I know I came home every day after school, and Mom was always there, and we'd have a little snack, and then we'd have dinner together.
Yeah, there wasn't the highest incidence of divorce that there is now.
Well, no, I mean, maybe there should have been, but I mean, people stayed married, but you're right. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Marlon from New Jersey called us about his hyssop garden in New Jersey, and he wanted to know about what the hyssop plant can be used for besides colds. You know, it really sounds like a beautiful garden with pretty small blue flowers that bloom in the summertime. So after some research, I discovered that it's an ancient herb in the mint family, and it's loved by the bees. And our bees need a little help these
days.
They
do need a little help. We have to stop poisoning them. That's right.
And yes, indeed, it is good for colds and much more. I mean, it's especially good for respiratory infections, especially congestion and bronchitis and asthma. And even Hippocrates prescribed it for lung conditions. And it can be used as a chest rub instead of Vicks VapoRub, which is made of petroleum, which is not a healthy thing. And for the chest rub, what you do is you mix some of the oil from the hyssop plant with almond or sunflower oil and just put that on your chest. Mm-hmm. Now, besides lung conditions, hyssop helps 81 different conditions.
Wow.
Including cancer and insomnia, digestive disorders like indigestion and nausea and vomiting and diarrhea. It calms anxiety and petit mal seizures and bruises, and it speeds healing and treats gout and fever and regulates blood pressure and circulatory problems. It's even used as a weight loss supplement. Wow, it sounds like a handy thing to have in your garden.
I think Martin knew what he was talking about. He's got this whole thing growing in his garden, and he calls in and asks what it does, and that's why we're doing this tip now, is because we didn't know. So,
and it can even be used as an external rub for arthritis. Huh. Now, how to prepare hyssop? Well, as a tincture or a tea, you just boil one or two teaspoons of dried leaves for about 10 to 15 minutes per cup of water. And the leaves can also be added to soups and salads and meat. But the flavor can be a little strong, and it smells similar to camphor. Mm. So hyssop can also be used as an insect repellent.
Wow.
And it can be used to de-louse. So if your kids get lice in school, that might be something to consider.
A lot safer than what we do use.
But don't use hyssop if you're pregnant, because it can have abortive effects and can also stimulate menstrual flow. And if you do have asthma, make sure that you tell your doctor or your healthcare practitioner if you want to try it.
Sounds good, Vicki. So, Martin, I hope that appeases you.
Marlon.
Oh, it was Marlon. Okay, good. Well, Marlon, thanks for calling in last week, and I'm glad we got you updated on what you can do with it. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
So, should we be worried about mad cow disease in California?
Interesting.
Well, the USDA says it's not a threat. And they found this cow that had it in a random testing. And, you know, we only test 0.1% of cows, and we only check 0.2% of the downer cows. Those are the ones that are just falling down.
It's hard to believe.
I mean, other cows in the group aren't even tested, and that we're in the same group as this cow that they found it in.
Right.
And in Europe and Japan, they test almost all their cows.
Yeah, especially the downer cows. I mean, if a cow is sick, it doesn't really sound like a good idea to eat it, does it?
Well, I'll say, and plus they're taking these downer cows that are so sick they can't even stand up. Everybody's seen it on TV in the past when there was a problem with these downer cows. And they're grinding up this meat and feeding it to the animals. They feed it to the cows that are healthy.
Yeah, well, they were. Hopefully they're not doing that anymore. But they are to some animals. They make it for pet food. But they're not. I don't think they're using it for cattle anymore as feed. At least they're not supposed to.
Well,
as of 2009, they passed a law that forbid it. But, you know, there was a lot before that was supposed to have been making it illegal to do it. So the loopholes have been an issue.
Well, there's other animals that get it besides cows, like the sheep and the goat and the deer and the elk and the cats and the kuru. Those are people that eat human brains. But anyway, they're feeding this BSE, they call it, the bovine spongiform encephalitis, because it looks like your brain is a sponge with holes in it
looks
and so
like
forth.
Swiss cheese, right.
But they feed these deer and elk to chicken and pigs.
It's just crazy. I mean,
why do we allow this?
Well, it's about money.
No wonder other countries don't want to buy our meat, though.
Well, that's right. And that was a big deal back in 2003 when this first thing came out, you know, and up in Moses Lake in Washington, they distributed the carcass of a cow that had bovine spongiform encephalitis to people in this country, and they ate it. And so they called in trying to find out if that was dangerous, and they said, oh, it's not a problem. It's like, now, wait a minute. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. What you're saying is that people get this Jakob Creutzfeldt disease, which is like bovine spongiform encephalitis in people, and when they get that, they die from it. And you're telling us it's not a problem? It's like, what are you doing?
I have a friend in California who had another friend in California that just died from this a couple weeks ago. And I don't know. I never saw it in the paper or heard anything about it.
No. Well, the USDA doesn't do a good job. It's about that simple.
And the incubation period's long, too.
Well, you don't know how long it is. But when you've got 76 million cases of food poisoning every year in this country, 300,000 hospitalizations, and 5,000 deaths, that means 25% of the population is getting food poisoning every year in this country.
Something's wrong with our system.
Yeah. And when you've got the problem with these downer cows that can have bovine spongiform encephalitis, and you're not even testing to find out if they have it, what are you doing? Of course, you have to look at the other side of it, too. Let's say there have been about 200 cases of Jakob Creutzfeldt disease from mad cow problems. That's in the history of the whole disease, and that's over many, that's a couple of decades.
But also, 200 people is not very many. It can take a couple of decades to get it after you eat it, too.
That's what they say, but you know, we don't really know. In fact, we don't even know what causes it. They say that prions cause it, and the guy that won the Nobel Prize from the University of California in San Francisco back in 1997, that's a guy named Stanley Prusiner, his information only suggested that that was a model. But when you talk to people like from the neuropathology section at Yale, they're saying that prions have never really even been shown to be infective. And so we don't really know that prions aren't the result of the disease rather than the cause.
But you know what? If we don't know, why are we allowing it?
Well, the point is...
And the fact is we need to just clean up our whole food supply because if 25%
right.
of the people in the U.S. are getting food poisoning every year...
Something wrong with that.
That's, yes. And why don't we clean up like where the cows are living and what their conditions are? Everybody's seen TV shows about this. And this is why they give them antibiotics. We wouldn't even have to give them antibiotics if we treated them better.
Well, that's
and
right.
This is one of the things that's good about organic grass fed beef because they're treated better.
Well, that's
right. They don't
really
get all
right.
this infection, even like their milk. Everybody knows, if they've listened to our show or some of the other ones, that that milk has pus in it.
Yeah.
Well, and why are their udders infected? Because of the conditions.
Oh, that's right.
And so they just give them antibiotics and other things, too. But anyway, let's talk about what the World Health Organization recommends to prevent this.
Well, they say there are four things that we should be avoiding, okay? And they passed legislation to do some of it. And one of it is to stop feeding infected animals to other animals, okay, to other cows.
Duh.
So you got a downer cow that's got bovine spongiform encephalitis, and the way that it's passed is by what's in the tissue of the cow, particularly its brain and its nervous system, but also other parts of the cow as well, including its blood. It's like, how stupid can you be and how unconcerned can you be with the population of this country to treat them like that?
And when you talk about blood, that's what they're feeding to the baby calves.
That's right.
They're feeding them the blood to wean them from their mothers.
All right. So the second thing World Health Organization suggested, and this was a few years ago, is how about testing the downer cows? Isn't that brilliant? I mean, maybe we'll discover, you know, that they have something that we don't want to include in what we eat. So they could do that. Third, they can stop feeding the infected parts of the cow to make what's called advanced meat recovery, which means that basically what they're doing is getting every speck of meat that's off the cow.
Just sucking it off of there.
Yeah, and trying to get rid of the brains and eyes and spinal cords and intestines, which are thought to be the most contagious. And then they're putting them in what? Things like hot dogs and hamburgers and
sausages and
jerky and meatballs and pizza toppings and taco fillings. I mean, hello. It's like, let's get sensitive about that.
They're even in pharmaceutical drugs.
Well, they're in the capsules sometimes. Yeah. That's right. So,
Europe and Japan, they test almost all their cows.
Well, they also don't allow this advanced meat recovery system. So, I mean, it's this country that's so beholden to the Cattlemen's Association because it's huge business.
We need to be ashamed of ourselves, and we need to take better care of our people.
All right, and what's the last citizens? Thing? The fourth thing is they say stop weaning calves on cow's blood. They feed them up to 3 or 4 cups of that a day when they're growing up.
That's disgusting.
It's just something disgusting and inappropriate. It just shows you the sad state of affairs. Anyway, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti with Nurse Vicki. If you have a question you want to call in about your health, or you have an issue that you want to join in to discuss with us, give us a call. And again, the number is 888-874-4888. We'll be right back after a short station break with more. Listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sputter here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, once again, assumptions can lead to false conclusions. We're going to talk about how hiatal hernia and acid reflux are related to Barrett's esophagus. So let's talk about what Barrett's esophagus is.
Well, let's define hiatal hernia first.
Okay.
what that is when the opening of where the esophagus joins the stomach is too wide, it can no longer completely close. And if it can't completely close, then the peristaltic activity of the stomach can reflux what's in the stomach into the lower end of the esophagus and burn it, because the stomach acids that are in the stomach can go to the lower end of the esophagus, and it doesn't have the protective lining that the stomach does. So the acid that's in the stomach burns the esophagus. And for years, we made the assumption that it was that acid that caused the Barrett's esophagus. Now, a Barrett's esophagus happens when the lining of the esophageal wall changes from its normal epithelial surface to something that looks like the intestines. And so you have these villi and these digestive capacity of these cells right there.
Where it's porous also.
Well, it's a problem because what you have is a change in the kind of mucosa that's there. And what we found now is that what causes that change is not the acid at all. It's bile. So when bile gets into the digestive tract and it goes down the intestine, that's probably part of what causes those cells in the intestine to change to be the absorptive surface that it is. When bile goes the other way and it goes up, okay, into the lower end of the esophagus, it does the same thing.
So when does the bile go up? Does it go up with the acid?
It will go up with whatever is there, yes. But for so many years, we thought it was acid that did that, and we were relying on using drugs that block acid production, like the purple pill. And, of course, Big Pharma thought that was great, and most of the gastroenterologists bought into that. And I don't know how many times I've had arguments with gastroenterologists about that, saying, don't be so sure it's the acid. In fact, it may be that the acid is causing some of the problem. Okay, or is not causing the problem, that it's something else. And it's not the H. pylori that's down there that is the issue either. So it's fascinating that what's happened here is that what we have is that the stem cells that are in the esophageal lining are turned on by bile so that they make the intestinal kinds of mucosa develop there.
So how is this type of mucosa, that you call it, the lining mm-hmm. of the esophagus now, that's instead of like skin, mm-hmm. it's a lining like the GI tract. Mm-hmm. How does that make it predisposed to cancer?
Nobody knows. They just know that it's in the wrong place. And when things go haywire like that, all kinds of things can happen.
I was just thinking of something, too. We frequently say that constant irritation can cause cancer. And if it's constantly being irritated by the bile...
Well, you don't know. I mean, that's Vicky's hypothesis, and it may even be right.
Yeah, that's how we have to be careful of assumptions.
Well, that's right. So you don't know, and it's nice to understand, but I've gotten to a place in medicine where I don't have to understand so much. I think the important thing is to observe and see what happens. And as we do more research and we learn more about it, we get answers that point in a certain direction. And I think that's okay. A lot of the research that we do now is terrible research because we try to just look at the change of one factor in our experiments and see what that does on tissue growth or on a certain illness or some health problem that we have. And very often it's multiple things that have to go wrong for that illness or that particular problem to develop. So an outcome study which looks at making lots of changes and then following it over time and seeing what it does gives you much better answers to what your questions are about what causes a certain thing to go wrong. So our research needs to change.
Well, the other thing is, too, like you were mentioning at the top of this topic about the proton pump inhibitors, mm-hmm. you know, like the purple pill that people take for these conditions.
Right.
And you use those as a very last resort because you always talk about other things. So are the DGL and the probiotics and the L-glutamine and the Ultra Clear Sustain, is that still going to pertain now that we know that it's caused from bile rather than acid?
Yes, it is. I think what you want to do is try to allow the gut to repair itself the best you can. See, it's not so much that you have to go in there and do a lot of things to change how the illness is developing. What you want to do is allow the body to heal itself. So when you give something like DGL, the licorice root extract, what does it do? It makes a thicker mucus that protects against anything that attacks that is in the presence of that lining.
So that could protect it from changing that.
It would protect it from bile. It would protect it from acid as well. It also increases the amount of antibody that's made so it can attack the microbes that shouldn't be there. And it increases circulation and it makes the cells live longer. So DGL is great. And then something like L-glutamine is the major metabolic fuel of the small intestine, but it also helps all of the GI tract by providing energy to it so it can do its work. And then things like Ultra Clear Sustain are a wonderful project, a product that will help you to feed the gut what it needs to do its work. So we're trying to strengthen the intestinal tract to do what it normally does in a way that will help it to stay healthy. And that's what this is all about. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicky. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicky's final 2020 tip.
I have some interesting tips for you. It's just a bend, not the end. But I wanted to start out with why a car's windshield is so large and the rearview mirror is so small.
I've always wondered about that.
Because our past is not as important as our future.
Oh, interesting.
So look ahead and move on.
All right.
Prayer. It's not a spare wheel that you pull out when you're in trouble, but it's a steering wheel that directs the right path throughout.
Oh, I like that. That's great.
Friendship is like a book. Mm-hmm. It takes a few seconds to burn, but it takes years to write.
Indeed.
All things in life are temporary. If going well, enjoy it. They will not last forever. If going wrong, don't worry. They can't last long either. Old friends are gold. New friends are diamonds. If you get a diamond, don't forget the gold, because to hold a diamond, you always need a base of gold.
There you go.
Often when we lose hope and think this is the end, God smiles from above and says, relax, it's just a bend, not the end.
That's true. I went through that one myself, and it's true.
When God solves your problems, you have faith in His abilities. When God doesn't solve your problems, He has faith in your abilities.
I really like that one. It is such a test.
When you pray for others, God listens to you and blesses them. And sometimes, when you are safe and happy, remember that someone has prayed for you.
Indeed.
Worrying does not take away tomorrow's troubles. It takes away today's peace. Boy, isn't that the truth.
Indeed. Well, those are great little tips, Vicki. I mean, if you could live your life that way, you'd be in the moment, and you'd be able to live fully and feel what's happening. Good stuff.
And maybe be healthier.
Indeed. The lines are open. The number is 888-874-4888.
We often hear that cholesterol's bad. And remember the fad when everybody was saying, what's your LDL? It was almost like when everybody was asking each other what their astrological signs were. And then there was a lot of talk about taking statins. And then they thought, well, maybe we should put them in the water.
Right.
It'd be good for everybody to lower their cholesterol. But if you've listened to us, you know that cholesterol has many benefits.
Indeed.
And it isn't good to have it too low. So what are some of the things that it's good for?
Well, there are a lot of things. I mean, first of all, you can't make vitamin D without it. You must have cholesterol because it forms the nucleus of what vitamin D is. And you can't make a lot of the hormones that our body needs without cholesterol. You can't make healthy cell membranes. It's impossible. And now there's evidence to suggest that maybe cholesterol even
protects against cancer.
Isn't that something?
So how does it do that?
Well, that's interesting. You know, cholesterol binds to proteins that are called ORPs. And those ORPs transport cholesterol inside the cell to where it needs to go to get to the cell membrane. But there's another lipid in there that's called PI4P that binds to these ORPs, and when bound to it, it stimulates cell growth. So the more cholesterol that you have to occupy these binding sites, the less that this PI4P lipid is able to bind to the site itself, and that may help to prevent or slow down cancer.
So in other words, the cells need the cholesterol to bind to the protein, and if there's no cholesterol, the cells grow faster, and then the cancer cells depend on that protein to grow fast.
That's right. And so what we're looking at is something that tells us that cholesterol is a good thing. And I'm still convinced that the higher your cholesterol to a certain point, maybe 250 or 300, the better your health will be, so long as
you have a good ratio with your HDL.
We have enough HDL. And what that's telling you is that the inflammation in your body is low. When HDL is high, you're not going to have much inflammation in your body. When it's low, it can be one of the markers that tells you that you have a lot of inflammation. I remember when I was really sick, okay, from my metallosis and cobalt poisoning. From my hip replacement. I was near dead. And I looked at my laboratory values, and they were unbelievably inflamed. I had the worst inflammation I've seen in any patient in my career. So I did my last will and testament. I thought I was done. And what I actually learned is that my normal cholesterol, which runs about 300 with an HDL of 90, wasn't like that anymore. It dropped to under 200, and my LDL dropped from 90 to 32. Now, that just shows you at how the body reacts to inflammation and how cholesterol, being something that's a good thing for us, has gotten a bad rap. We need cholesterol, but we also need to be healthy. And when we get into this inflamed state, what happens is that then it attacks the cholesterol, it becomes oxidized, it then can be deposited in our arterial lining and cause plaques and blockages and clots.
See, what the real problem with arteriosclerotic heart disease and the cholesterol is really from the inflammation.
That's correct.
The cholesterol goes there to take care of the inflammation and to soothe it and so forth. But
right.
If we have too much inflammation, then we get too much cholesterol, and then sometimes it breaks off.
Okay.
So what we need to do is to get at the cause. And the other thing is that a while back, weren't some of the statins, or like Mevacor, I remember Mevacor was supposed to cause cancer?
Well, in animals it did. It's an interesting study. And you know, what's the logic of using a statin drug? What you're doing is you're not treating the cause of the problem at all. What you're doing is you're stepping in the middle of the reaction, and you're lowering the amount of LDL cholesterol, and you're raising the HDL a little bit, and you're lowering the total amount of cholesterol. And a lot of these cardiologists that just don't get the value of cholesterol because they have tunnel vision are trying to lower cholesterol below 150 even.
And they're giving people statins even when their cholesterol ratio is normal, and they say that their LDLs
That's right.
on the border. Yeah. So it's kind of like,
or even outright abnormal by a lot. I mean, like mine is definitely in my healthy state, very much higher than it, than they think it should be.
Well, maybe it's good here to go over a little bit what some of these side effects are from statins, besides the fact that possibly they could cause cancer, and also keeping in mind this new study that shows that cholesterol can protect against cancer. Well, what are a few of the side effects from statins? Don't they cause some pretty bad muscle?
Well, they can cause liver disease, they cause muscle inflammation, and if there's enough inflammation in your muscles and it releases the pigment myoglobin from the muscle, it can cause what's called rhabdomyolysis, which means that the muscles lysed it for, to a large extent, and all that pigment goes to the kidneys where it blocks it up, and you die in kidney failure. It can cause problems with peripheral neuropathies, which are disastrous. The cases I've seen of that have just been horrible and very difficult to treat. And it also can do, it lowers your ability to be able to have cholesterol to do the things it needs to do. It may affect your memory. I think people with lower cholesterols tend to have more Alzheimer's disease. So the cholesterol is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's the body that has the problem with inflammation.
And also, if somebody is on a statin, they definitely need to be taking coenzyme Q10 with it.
Well, right, because when you take a statin, you block the production of CoQ10 as well as blocking the production of cholesterol. So what we really have here is a terrible drug that does a lot of bad things, that doesn't go after the cause of what the problem is. And because it helps some people who won't do a healthy lifestyle, it gets a lot of prominence. To use it in people who have a high risk for having a heart attack has been shown to not be a good idea. So people, for primary prevention, this is a stupid thing to do. For people who've had a heart attack or a stroke, most doctors will prescribe it, and I will sometimes too, but only after I've spent a lot of time talking about lifestyle.
And what about eggs? You know, those have really gotten a bad rap.
Well, eggs are the best food on the planet, and they have lots of cholesterol that's healthy. And the less you cook it, the better, because you don't want to oxidize it by frying it and making it so that you're burning the cholesterol.
That's interesting, point of view, isn't it?
Yeah, well, what we've got here is a system that's really confused. I mean, if somebody...
Fresh organic ones, too.
Well, the things that people can do have had a heart attack or a stroke is do something different than you have been doing that led to getting it. Eat a healthy diet. Exercise regularly. Reduce your stress. Get enough sleep. Weigh what you should and have a purpose in your life that's meaningful. There's no medicine on the planet that's going to help you at all compared to that.
And find ways to reduce your stress levels.
Sure. This is 100 times more valuable than taking a statin drug. And that's even in the insert. They always say lifestyle first. But what do we doctors do, not including myself, is we get out there and think, well, we can't trust that patients are going to make any changes in their lifestyle. We're not going to spend much time teaching them ourselves. So we'll just use the drugs.
And
of course,
fix.
Yeah. And
but what's it really fixing?
Well, it's enabling you to have this false perception that lifestyle doesn't matter. I mean, if there are... 100 times more powerful than the drug, why not do what makes sense?
So what are you saying to people now that are listening to this that are on statins? Should they just go off of them on their own, ask their doctor?
I'm not giving any advice. I can't give them advice. They're not my patients. But for my patients, I work hard on them with lifestyle measures. And it's not like we are always successful. And it doesn't mean that I never use a statin. There will be a time when it's just hopeless, and I'll do that, particularly if somebody's had a heart attack or two or a stroke. I mean, you certainly don't want another heart attack, and you certainly don't want a stroke.
The other thing that people frequently ask is, what about red rice yeast?
Well, that's just another name for Mevacor. That's lovastatin, except it grows in a plant instead of in a test tube.
Well, that's scary, because Mevacor is the one that they think can cause cancer
in
rats.
Animals. Okay, so it's, I mean, the whole thing gets very confused for people who don't look into detail about this. I mean, when the cardiologist can't get it right, why would we think that we're going to get it right? I mean, there's a few people like Gary Null who have really studied this, and I have too. And we know Vicki and I have been telling you about statins. But you have to listen to it, and you have to do your own research. I mean, you even can get some research from the insert from Lipitor. I mean, read that. It'll talk a lot about
really
lifestyle.
You need to really take lifestyle seriously. If we could package that up into a pill, it would be a bestseller.
Oh, it'd be a blockbuster drug.
We need to do lifestyle. It's the same thing with diabetes. If you live a healthy lifestyle, most of the people don't have to take the medication.
Look, Vicki, most diseases are not genetic. They're epigenetic. So Bruce Lipton's work, okay, The Biology of Belief, says that the environmental stresses that we face change the way our DNA expresses itself. It changes the way our genes express themselves.
So we don't need to just accept that because our relatives have cancer or heart disease or whatever, that we're going to get it too, because it's really up to us if we're going to get it most of the time.
Well, that's right. Well,
according to our lifestyle.
Well, yeah, even the cancers, you know, that's an epigenetic disease. It's hardly ever a genetic disease.
But some things are really difficult because we've got so much pollution in our environment.
There it is.
We can try to do the things that we're capable of doing, like with air filters and filtering the water and trying to eat organic and to do things to protect ourselves. There's only so much you can do, you know. But, I mean, it's like if you get sick, it's not, we're not trying to say that it's your fault.
Yeah, well, let's face it. Pogo was right. We've found the enemy, and they are us. And I mean they are us. It's not them out there. It's us.
Well, even like at the top of the top of the show, we're talking about mad cow disease. Us means all of it.
Well,
you know, we're not taking care of our food supply.
Well, you've got to do your part. You have to do what you can to respect the globe, the planet, and honor it and not pollute it and not participate in that. But we do. You know anybody that doesn't have a car? We're polluting the planet. Are we eating the wrong foods? Is it too much animal-based? Yeah. What are we doing in terms of taking care of ourselves so that we can set the example for others to follow?
Well,
it's not about legislation. It's about inspiration. It's about knowing that you have to evolve to make the changes you need to make in order to make the world a better place for yourself, the community, and for our grandkids and grandkids to come.
Taking responsibility for our own health. And part of that is doing things like listening to this show. That's why we do this show.
Yeah, well, let's see. Most people are doing all the listening in the world, but it's about taking action. And the problem is everybody feels powerless. Well, one person can't make a change. Well, only one person can start a process for change.
Well, it's just like the saying about let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. It's
right
the same
on.
Principle.
That's exactly right. So there's a lot you can do that you, and I'm talking to all of us, and myself and Vicki as well, that we can do to live a lifestyle that makes more sense, that's healthy for us, and is healthy for the planet.
And remember to read ingredients. Don't trust labels on products.
Well, that's right.
And recycle. I mean, we can. There are things that we can do.
Well, your dollars speak heavily. The way you spend them makes a big difference.
Yeah, we vote with our pocketbooks.
You buy something and you fund it, somebody's going to make more of it because they're going to make more of a profit. So you're supporting that process. And again, it's because we feel helpless. We feel like one person doesn't matter. It's a single thought that starts something that can happen. It's the pioneer who takes a 1,000-mile journey and does the first 2 feet. Without the first 2 feet, nothing happens. And so it's being inspired and knowing that things are the way that it can be the way that they should be. But you have to do your part. It's not just those corrupt politicians in Congress, even though it's absolutely true. They're doing a terrible job. We've lost our democracy in this country. It's a terrible thing. Anyway, we have to start taking action ourselves. You can't feel helpless that what you do doesn't matter. And when we do that, we'll be back in a position where we start to make change that can have teeth in it. So I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com. And prescriptions for health will also be archived on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to drsaputo.com and check out our fast track videos located on drsaputo.com under radio. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life. We'll see you next Monday, 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time.
Have a great week.